The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is a sort of a bonus Beyond, I could say. This is, of course, Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where we cover all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation. Normally, we air on Wednesdays, and there will still be a normal episode of Beyond this week for you to listen to, covering all the news of the week, but we're sort of doing a bonus episode this week because I wanted to be able to deliver this news to you all there first. We have a lot of new details about Horizon Forbidden West, because I've played about 4 hours of it. Ahead of launch, I was fortunate enough to be able to play 4 hours of Forbidden West, some of the early sections of the game, and something a little bit later. And so I wanted to sort of break down the details, answer some questions perhaps my wonderful panel has for me, since we can't ask you for questions just yet, and dig into the game a little bit ahead of, you know, its launch at the end of February next month, February 18th. So before we get into all of that stuff, I'm joined this week by Mark Medina.
One could say this is a bonus episode, but should one?
That's the question we're going to answer today. We're going to spend 50 mm-hmm. minutes on just that alone. And to help us answer that question, we're also joined by Lucy O'Brien.
Hello. I am so excited to be here. This is my most anticipated game of this year. Nothing is going to top it. I'm so thrilled to hear everything, Dorno.
Very happy to have you here as well. It's been a while, but glad to have you back. And we're also joined by Jada Griffin.
Hello, hello. I'm just dying to know if there are Ninja Turtles in Horizon's future. Like, are they in Forbidden West?
All of the outfits are available. Every Ninja Turtle outfit.
Having not played it, I bet I could answer that question.
Feels like a reasonable thing, yeah. Until Sony acquires Nickelodeon, but that's not sort of the media landscape just yet. But no, just to sort of set the stage, essentially, I've played a bit of it for, if you haven't already seen it, this is sort of going live at the same time, please go check out, we have sort of a full preview of it, of my general impressions of it. We're going to get, you know, use this show to be able to get into a little bit more detail about things. But it's a wonderfully edited video by Pat Coughlin, who, you know, just is incredible at everything he touches. And so please go check it out. He did a wonderful edit. Mark, you're also working on a sort of comparison piece for people to check out.
I assume by the time you're watching this, it's live, but I don't know. It's not done yet in my world, so who knows? Things could go very wrong between now and then.
Who knows how the next few hours will look, but yeah, that'll be sort of a comparison to let you see some of what the gameplay in Forbidden West looks like, right, compared to Zero Dawn. Of course, this is in development footage that we're going to be showing you, and you'll see some of this if you're watching the video version, but just as a heads up, that is, yeah, that's not from the final build of the game or anything, but yeah, I was playing a sort of in-dev build, but yeah, we'll have that and some more stuff hopefully coming ahead of that, but for now I think probably the best and easiest thing to jump into is to sort of explain to you all the gist of what I saw, and then if there are any immediate questions, and then we can sort of like get into the nitty-gritty from there. I didn't play the immediate opening of the game. They hid that from me. I don't know sort of how it opens. Where I started was pretty much right after the, I think, sort of the credits roll, you know, like the opening credits would roll. We're kind of right there. So I started playing, Aloy is still in, you know, her region, for lack of a better term. She is not yet made it into the Forbidden West proper, and she's sort of going on to the last cusp of civilization, sort of a mix of Oseram and Karja tribes from the original games. They sort of have some settlements out near the border, and she wants to get into the Forbidden West to go on her journey to help stop this red blight that's infecting the world, figure out what's going on with Silens and whatnot, and hopefully get some answers. But she needs to deal with a couple roadblocks that are in her way there at the beginning. So I saw all of that, and then they skipped me forward to play a bit of a new area called the Arena, which is an optional area, but you'll be able to do some really cool fights and get some really, really cool gear, and I can talk about that a little bit later in the combat section. But otherwise, I played, I'd say, roughly 3.5 hours. I did step foot in the literal titular Forbidden West. I did spend a couple minutes in there.
Titular.
The titular Forbidden West, if you will. And I will take me... I will say I'm going to try to save any like story-related stuff till toward the end and keep it still a little bit vague for people who don't want spoilers of that stuff. But I got to see a lot more of the exploration, the combat, some of the new weapons, some of the new settlement stuff that they're working on, some of, you know, just all the systems at work, both new and old, and how they've been refined and improved and whatnot. And so that's sort of... the big picture of what I saw. But I guess, like, to start off, does anyone have sort of a like dying question about it? Lucy, like, I know you were saying this is your most anticipated game. Is there anything like you really want to know about
Forbidden West? so much stuff, but I, you know, I do want to keep the flow of this podcast fairly cohesive, so let's start with some exploration stuff.
Totally.
I know a lot of our viewers and a lot of people who played the first game are very hungry to hear about the climbing, like, I didn't have a massive issue with the climbing in the first game. I think that a lot of people were comparing it to Breath of the Wild because they came out very close together. But, you know, I totally understand the criticisms that the climbing in the original was somewhat limited. So is it like Breath of the Wild where you can climb pretty much anything, or is it just more sort of open and there are more routes to climb?
It is, at least from like what I played in the section that I was in, it's not full Breath of the Wild, every little inch of the world you can grab onto and hook onto and be able to climb. It's not that, and I don't think it's trying to be that in any particular way.
I've always felt it looked more like Assassin's Creed. Is it more like that?
I would say it is much closer to Assassin's Creed if AC was out in the open more, was out in nature more instead of cities as sort of like your primary stops, which is more so like how Valhalla and things have been. You can see, if you're watching some of the gameplay, you will be able to see you know, climbing points and things like that if you click in your focus. And even just from like a quick few areas, you can see there are a lot more handholds and often several paths. Whereas I think in the first game, like Lucy, to your point, for some people, I think it also wasn't a problem because it generally didn't ask you to do it too much. They're just like, if it asked you to do any sort of platforming or climbing in very specific sections, whereas here, I think it wants to encourage you to be able to go places more. Mark, I think you might have mentioned something like this, but at least for me, I sort of put it in the preview. There were times where I would see, I knew there was a collectible sort of over a mountain, and I was supposed to go around the mountain rather than over, but I would just kind of like brute force Aloy to jump on rock paths to get her to go because I didn't want to waste the time.
Everyone knows that the fastest way from point A to point B is a straight line.
A straight line.
And if there's a mountain in your way, it doesn't matter.
You go through it.
It's so true.
But so here it feels designed that it's like they know you're going to want to try to get two things more and they want to give you the avenues to do it. I will say also, if you're watching the video version, so basically what you do is the focus works a little bit differently now. When you just click in R3, it does a quick scan of the area around Aloy without putting you into that like slow over the shoulder, like kind of ambling walk that she'll do. You can just quickly click it in, and it'll bring up these yellow sort of lines and posts. We saw a little bit of that in the state of play last year, but essentially those will tell you optional places to climb onto and jump onto. And a few things that help, it was just right in the video footage for a sec, is the pole caster, which is really fun to use. It's essentially like you activate it by a double jump of pressing an X to launch her off of a holding spot or to jump off the ground, and then press X again and she kind of like grapple hooks and zip lines onto a spot.
B-roll right there where she was next to a house, can I climb on top of that house?
I think there are some you can. I would restrain to say every house because I did not try. Every house in
Dornbush, what were you doing for 4 hours? You should just be trying to climb everything.
I was playing the mini game, board game that's in the universe that we can talk about later. But no, so there is more to climb. There's more to go to. I will say, sort of like in settlements, I think they also just thought through building structure better. Because mm-hmm. in the first settlement that I went to, you can walk in sort of the main entrance. There were like at least, I want to say, 3 or 4 exits from that single building to be able to walk around and get out into different parts of the settlement. You never felt like you had to kind of just funnel into one place. So if it was like, oh, I need to go talk to this person on the other side of the brewery, which is the big building in this first settlement, you don't have to walk around it and do this big loop. You can literally just like cut through it. And there's like nice little pathways there. It feels like they thought through all that stuff more. So it is not the every inch climbable thing that I think some people want, but that's mostly, I think, because, as you said, Lucy, these games came out a week apart from each other originally, Zero Dawn and Breath of the Wild, and so everyone just put them together. But they are different games. They have a lot of different intentions and a lot of different play styles and things, and I think this works for it as a much closer to Assassin's Creed kind of climbing. But yeah, like as you just maybe saw in the B-roll, you're walking through near a workbench and some other things Aloy can go to. I don't think you can necessarily climb every single pole that's right next to those workbenches necessarily, but you can climb a lot more, and it's also much
Mark
smoother.
Will try, though. Mark
he will try.
Will yep. try.
Yes. I'll let you know. It's like X things you can climb. Can you climb a tree?
I can't wait for your feature of every building you can and can't climb in Horizon Forbidden yeah. West.
That was actually a serious question, though. Can you climb a tree? There's a lot of trees.
Did I climb a tree?
Can I put myself in a tree? Now,
I don't
and
know
that's
if
the
I did.
Thing is, like, even in Assassin's Creed, which most people think is like fully climbable, it's not, right? There's a lot of like times where Eivor will kind of do that whole like kick up a wall and then fall back down, and then the same thing with a tree. If a tree's not meant to be climbable, she can't get up it. And so I'm wondering if you're going to see a lot of that here, where people are going to initially feel like, oh, this is actually more limiting than I thought. And it's like, no, it's right in line with what I would expect when it comes to a game like that.
It is so much more freeing than the first game, and I think much easier to climb around, where you don't feel like, I would say a lot of the paths that you climbed in one, it literally was like one way to go. There were not really options. Mm-hmm. Whereas like even here, you can climb to a few different ones. You know, if you have Aloy sort of angled in a direction, it's not going to cut you off from being able to find a foothold. The Polecaster lets you get to some further away places, which is really nice. And then you can use that in combination with the Shield Wing, which is the glider. So you hold a button to launch that after you've jumped off a high point. And you can land and grab onto a handhold. You can use it as like a Polecaster. In midair, like you can jump to a Polecaster spot while gliding. You're not like just restrained to glide the whole time. So there is a lot more freedom of movement there.
Is there a limitation? Oh, sorry, Jada. You haven't got to ask
Yeah, you go ahead,
yet.
Jada. We're getting carried away.
It's totally fine. You guys are hyped and excited, and I'm happy for you. So technically, in the first one, there were multiple ways you could do things, but it was a little bit like under the radar way to do it. I used to use the mounts, like the Broadhead or the Strider, and they actually were really good about jumping up on cliffs.
Yeah.
So you could use that. I was going to ask if you were able to do that, if you did any mounted
you can. Yeah, I think I was mounted on a charger for a bit. You can still kind of get them to do some hops like that, but I would say I did that most often in Zero Dawn to try to fight essentially the climbing, like to get around it. Here it doesn't feel like you need to do that as much, I think, is the thing. It feels like the world is more bespokely designed to have places to grab onto, ways to get up perches, and there's a lot more of them in the world. Because I spoke to the narrative director, Ben McCaw, throughout the demo, and he was like, we also, you know, thought about the world and, okay, we're letting people be able to get to a lot more of these spots. Both, he said it's a much more vertical game, both in terms of, like, heights of mountains and things and the depths of the water. So it's going to be a lot more to explore in that case. And he was also saying that allows them to put more things off the beaten path. And that's sort of a general thing I'll probably say a lot, but, like, they wanted to make sure that everything you're doing feels more rewarding. Because at the end of the day, in Zero Dawn, the rewards could kind of get pretty samey after a while. It could feel like there wasn't much reason to do things if you didn't need to, and they're really trying to think about how can we get people to want to see more of this world, especially because we're creating more world for people to see.
Yeah. I mean, I love hearing that they're really focusing on verticality, especially with the shield wing.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you know, one of the most enjoyable things to do in any video game, in any AAA, like, open world style video game, is climb up to the tallest thing you can and jump off it, right? Like, that is just, I love doing that. That's why I like the Spider-Man game so much. But, like, you know, I love this idea that we're going to be able to sort of jump off and soar down and just see that environment. Like, I'm already sort of picturing, like, sailing over some of the bigger machines. Like, oh, I'm getting chills just speaking about it.
I don't,
that,
oh,
that
man.
That was going to be my question. Is there limitations to the shield wing? Like, does it eventually, so like in Breath of the Wild, right, your stamina eventually can seem to run out and you're just, like, left with nothing. Does it, like, it almost looks like it kind of dissipates?
So,
or is that just graphics?
Not that I noticed. Without spoiling it, I'll say the tech that you're picking up for the shield wing was originally being used for several purposes, and right now I think it is at the beginning of the game, it's sort of in a state where it can only do so much. So,
oh, I see. So you can make it stronger.
Theoretically, I don't know if that's going to be the case. They kind of wouldn't tease too much about, like, later game stuff, but I saw it being used in a different fashion, so I would not be surprised if you maybe get the chance to use it that way. But there was no sort of stamina meter with it as you were going. It basically was just until you kind of hit the ground or pole casted to a spot. And there was, in fact, just, like, speaking to kind of both what you were asking, I was gliding for a very long time at one point, because when I did step into the Forbidden West, it did have sort of this, like, you're on a very high cliff face, and the Forbidden West is sort of this plain below you. And so you do have this kind of wonderful sailing down moment. You can kind of just take in the actual Forbidden West for the first time and see machines off in the distance, see, like, a bandit camp over here, see what will be a place to pick up a side quest that I found, and a few things of, like, ruins of the old world and stuff like that. It felt, I would say, I really love Zero Dawn. I think it's fair to say, like, the people here who really love Zero Dawn, it was a great game, but it could, like, I would say first and foremost, its open world was built around letting you fight the machines, whereas this field's built around fighting the machines and having a world that feels like a world you want to explore and say, oh, I see those 6 points there, I want to go get them. It feels like it's really taking the, like, Ghost of Tsushima and, you know, the later Assassin's Creed game sort of mantra of, okay, we can show you 6 or 7 things from this cool vantage point. You should maybe go try and see what those could be. Like, it's rewarding to go to those things.
Was there any restrictions? I'm going to jump in.
Was there any doggy dog out here, Jada? We're just going to talk over one another and the loudest person wins.
Exactly. Was there any restrictions between, like, the amount of times you could, was it polecaster, you said, is the new grappling hook type thing? Is there any limit to how many times you could polecaster, shield wing, polecaster, shield wing? Or if I'm, like, going along a cliffside and I'm just flying, can I, like, polecaster, jump off, and then reshield wing?
Not that I can remember. So basically the polecaster works on specific points. They'll be denoted by, like, a different UI pop-up, essentially.
Gotcha. I think they look more like a diamond.
Yeah, so there are certain points, but in terms of, like, I was shield wing gliding, used my polecaster to jump over to a spot, immediately jumped off of it, shield wing glided again, and there was no sort of, like,
shield wing
limit. What?
Shield Wong,
excuse me. Yeah. Yes,
use the correct term.
I'm sorry. It's like I write for a living. What am I doing? And so I shield Wong my way down, and it worked very well.
I don't like that. No, go back to the other one. Now that you've used it in a sentence, I hate it.
Everyone out there, in the month before Horizon comes out, we need to make shield Wonging a thing. I'm sure Gorilla will love it. But no, so yeah, it didn't feel like there was a limitation there. There are still certain, like, cooldowns when it comes to the tech in Aloy's like spear and everything, because you could, like, override an enemy. Like I said, I was riding a charger at one point, and it would have, like, a slight cooldown for things like that. But in terms of using it, it is very possible there was a cooldown, and I just wasn't using it frequently enough or didn't spot it, but it wasn't limiting in the examples, like, of the world that I was playing through.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So go ahead, Mark.
I have a question about the map. Hopefully it yes. still fits in with exploration. So going back to Assassin's Creed, we're talking yes. about Odyssey and Valhalla and then Far Cry 6. You start on what is essentially a mini island in mm-hmm. all three of those games that then expands to this huge open world. Is that what's happening here? Because you're saying that you start, even after the opening... The opening is probably a separate thing, right? And then you started in this world, and you said you're not in the Forbidden West yet, but that you then eventually got there.
Yeah.
Is this like a mini map that then eventually becomes a wider map? And if so, once you get to the Forbidden West, can you go back to the original area?
Yes, you could go back. It wasn't limited because there is a lot to do in Chainscrape, the sort of first settlement, and there were even a few like little pockets of life around it that I didn't get to go to. Like, I played that area for about 3.5 hours, and I would say roughly you could probably spend at least double in there. Doing side quests and hunting for things. And that was before really stepping into the Forbidden West. And so I think the best way to do it, and it's hard to say it without the Breath of the Wild comparison, but it did feel a little bit Great Plateau-y to the rest of the open world to a certain extent. It was like, here's
the tutorial
this
island.
Tutorial island. Every game has one.
It's still connected, and it's still like, because essentially you are, as we know, I guess spoilers for Zero Dawn, but you are in the contiguous, you know, United States, the continental 48 states, and so you mm-hmm. are going across that land, and it seems like you will be traversing from where Zero Dawn is, which I'm blanking exactly on the state. I want to say Wisconsin or Wyoming.
No, it's in Colorado.
Is it Colorado? Okay, so you're going from, thank you. Colorado, you are going to be traveling. I think where I was a little west of Colorado, but you're essentially going to be traveling out to the coast. And so I don't know how big that map will be getting you out there, but this felt like a pretty big, meaty chunk of the game. Like almost a Frozen Wilds-esque size thing, and I was just stepping out into the Forbidden West. But it didn't limit me from going back, because you can fast travel back, especially, mm-hmm. too, so you don't even have to, like, climb up all the points. You can fast travel back, do all the things that you want to do back there, and hang out in Chainscrape or go to some of the other settlements. So you're not blocked off. It's not like, okay, you go here and then you're done. And again, I don't know how long the beginning of the game before that was. I would imagine maybe a couple hours, but yeah, you're not getting into the Forbidden West until a bit further. And it, I don't think that's to say the Forbidden West isn't a big part of the game. I think it is. I think this game is just that big. Mm-hmm. Like, I just,
yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm hoping for, is like, yeah, playing through Valhalla, you can spend 6-7 hours in Norway. And that's mm-hmm. nothing. Then yeah. you get on the ship and you go to England and you're like, oh, I was like nowhere. Like now.
Yeah.
I'm
and I
map.
Like
and so,
wasted so much time collecting every single like tiny little collectible in the Norway.
You're like, this map is so easy and small.
Nope. Yeah. Hey, Donna, I've got a yes. question. Did they get rid of the thing? Remember how like,
mm-hmm. oh yeah, it's, I mean,
it's the bundles.
But by the end you had so many,
so
like,
I never fast traveled. I do think I was picking up fast travel items,
that's right.
But I would say,
is that what it was, right?
Yeah, they're like packs.
You eventually unlock like
a
the ultimate one where you don't need
the
to
gold one.
Yeah,
but that's, and it felt like that's what it should have been all
yeah.
along. It felt like limiting it was sort of redundant.
I think it's still there, but again, I was playing it in development, like build. Mm. It literally, that might be something you get, you know, 20 minutes into being in the Forbidden West. Like, I don't know the extent to that, but I was picking up packs like that. But I will say, like, at least in this area, I never felt
no shade.
No, totally. I never felt the need to fast travel while I was in here, because I knew there was still so much to see. Like, I was spending so much time doing things that felt worthwhile, that it wasn't a need of mine. If I retread some territory, I was like, oh, well, there's probably a part I could pick up on the way, or, oh, I found a new type of, you know, side quest that I had never heard of before that I can do there. There was usually enough things that, at least on like a first exploration, I never felt the need to fast travel.
Hmm.
Okay. I mean, by the end, you know,
I imagine,
does,
yeah.
But I get it.
I would assume by the end we'll probably get a permanent thing if it's not in there pretty early.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to chat about the settlements, seeing as we've mentioned them a few times. You know, in your preview, you said that they were sort of more full of life.
Yeah.
Than the ones in Zero Dawn. And I love hearing that. I mean, I thought the settlements in Zero Dawn were perfunctory, like they were fine. I think that, you know, the Frozen Wilds DLC did a good job at like really painting a picture of a living, breathing settlement with a tribe that I was really interested in.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you know, not super memorable. So like, yeah, I'd love to hear more things.
Yeah, that I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from what I did, and I think speaks to sort of the level of things that we were talking about. This is a tangent, but Mark, I know we were talking before the show. Like, I would say Horizon Forbidden West is a very beautiful game, but it doesn't feel like unreal compared to Zero Dawn. Like, it, they feel very much like a natural evolution visually, and I think that's because, one, as Mark, you had said, like, Zero Dawn already is such a spectacularly beautiful game, but two, I think where they put their resources were in terms of, like, depth of animation, amount of animation, and sort of, like, the variety of things going on. So, like, Chainscrape is the first settlement that I come into. It's sort of a border edge settlement between where we are with the Karja and the Oseram, and then, you know, on the edge of the Forbidden West. It was a relatively small town, but everything about it has a lot more life and variety to it. Like, I'll start with the brewery, but it's like you can go into the brewery and nearly every table is packed with people having conversations or like sharing drinks or food, and differently animated at sort of almost every table, it felt like. You can have like fun little interactions with people as they're walking around. You can have an interaction with like the chef who's there. You can do all these little things. And then there were side pocket rooms as well, of some people working, because part of Chainscrape is that it is, you know, a working village. And so there's some parts of it that were workers' rooms, some parts that were like a sidebar where I found that board game minigame and another side quest. Some were just like storage areas. Like, there was a lot more variety to it rather than it just feeling like, here's the one house in the town. Because then there were, you know, several other stalls outside, including really big ones, like where I found the workbench and someone to buy equipment from. There were there was a house that sort of the leader of the settlement is staying at that I could go to and interact with and find some things in. And you just see like a wider array of things within a small area. And that also means there are more side quests to do and more interesting side quests and more interesting NPCs. Ben McCaw, the narrative director, said they spent a lot of time making sure that there was a lot more life and uniqueness to jumping into these side quests, because they understood some people didn't jump into all the side quests of Zero Dawn. They want to make everything here a little more worthwhile. And some of that just comes down to the writing and the characterization of things. Like a big deal for me and Lucy, I know it's something that we talked about with Zero Dawn, is like, I think there are really, really beloved characters from Zero Dawn. Like obviously Aloy, I think Silence is great. I think a few of the side companions are really lovable, Erend is great. And Erend is back here. So is Petra, who is sort of a smaller character, but pops up here early. There were really lovable characters, but because it was introducing this world, it could be very jargon bogged down. Like it could be really about trying to get you into understanding all of the facets of this world. Everyone here felt so much more human, like kind of instantly. Like the conversations were more natural. I wanted to have conversations with everyone, whereas sometimes I could feel like conversations in Zero Dawn were the things I needed to do to get to the quest. Mm-hmm. Here it was like the conversations.
I love hearing that, especially because like I thought Aloy and Ashley Birch as her voice actress did such a good job at, like, you know, Aloy felt like such a fully fleshed out character to me. She was so endearing. She's very charismatic, and she spoke in such a sort of like colloquial way. She never felt like the sort of the ghost's protagonist. Like she felt very real to me. She felt very sort of, you know, three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And so it's really nice to hear that some of the, you know, the other characters are going to be able to match that level of
that humanness. You know, yeah. It feels like it rubbed off on them.
I like that.
Yeah, there's several interaction with both Erend and Varl, who also returns, and Petra, and then like new characters who there's a lot of levity to it. It's not like Horizon is suddenly a comedy, but what I did notice was just how affable it was, the conversation sometimes. And I think you'll see it in some of the cutscenes and things playing on the video version. A thing for me with a lot of Zero Dawn's conversations, it's not everyone, but I would say the vast majority were close-up of a person talking, close-up of a person talking back and forth, and then maybe occasionally a cutaway to more of their body. Mm-hmm. Here, I would say the majority of the conversations were more lively, more uniquely animated, more bespoke to those characters, more you know, like personal touches to all of it. And so that made me have these conversations where sometimes I, you know, in the base game, I would maybe click through because I'm like, okay, I don't need this. I wanted to hear kind of what everyone was saying.
If you're watching the video version, look at this woman. She's got some swagger on her.
So that's
that's
a side character some people may have missed also in Zero Dawn. That's Petra. She comes back and very much, I think, clearly has a crush on Aloy. They're back and
Petra. That's Petra. My goodness. It's been a minute.
Okay. No, totally. I totally understand. It's been a few years. And it's like just them immediately coming together again was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about Petra. They are so great together. And even like Erend, his sort of like warmth and humanity. But he's also like, without spoiling it, at a very unique point in his relationship with Aloy, because she went and did her big, you know, she saved Meridian and then kind of just went off immediately. And he was dealing with all of his like personal family issues and, you know, his sister, I believe it was, and so much else that he was going through. And she just kind of left. And so that puts them in a unique place. This game, I think what I was playing at least is roughly, I think, 6 hours after the end of Zero Dawn, 6 months, six months.
Ah. Wow.
But
she didn't even get to sleep.
Yeah. It just was right into the, no. Yeah. So 6 months after. So, you did get to pick up with some of these new characters. There were some really, new engaging characters as well. I would say, you know, just in terms of that sort of, stiffness that could kind of happen in the first game, there's almost a character in here, a sun priest, who almost feels like one of those, he is the, you know, stodgy bureaucrat who refuses to act outside of the ways that he knows, because he wants to be the important person and sort of has this like, look at me, pay attention to me, and I'm going to act in this refined way. I was referring to like his scrolls and stuff. And Aloy is just, nah, I'm just going to get this done so I don't have to deal with you. And there's like a lot of very funny interactions in that way where Aloy is basically like, oh, these people in power are just too obsessed with like bureaucracy and red tape and things. And I'm just going to get this done because I know I need to save the world. So yeah, the only other, I guess, character thing, I know we're jumping around here, but the only other character thing I want to mention is I did see the introduction, I think it's the introduction of Regala, the new villain. And I do not want to spoil the moment and how it plays out, and you won't see it play out in full. You'll maybe see like 20 seconds at most in the B-roll. It is such a cool villain entrance. It is a total show don't tell of like, here is the power that Regala wields, and here is the way she is going to wield it, and here is the like unremitting, I am going to see my point of view through, and sort of sets her up as really a powerful foil for Aloy. That's different in a way from, you know, the back and forth she and Silence eventually ended up having, and I didn't really get to see where Silence plays into this. But yeah, the introduction of Regala made me go like, okay, this is going to be an awesome villain. Like, I was very, very happy about that sort of introductory sequence.
Well, she's voiced by Angela Bassett, right?
Yes, yeah. And she said just a couple words, but it was immediately just like, oh God, it's the power of Angela Bassett. Like, I have to fight Angela. Oh God.
I mean, that woman's a queen. That woman, she deserves that type of, just like, that gravitas, she just commands it.
It felt befitting of Angela Bassett as an actress, but also befitting of like making this character an actual force to be reckoned with, because I don't know, villains can be hit or miss in video games a lot. Like, I've been playing through the original Uncharted trilogy and the Lazarevich and things like that can often be, you know, kind of miss the mark.
One-sided,
Here it felt like, one, we're going to get to see and understand a lot of Regala because she's sort of a known force in the world to the Forbidden West tribes. But we're also going to get some really, really great scenes with her. So that was really promising. But yeah, on the whole, characters, the world, the settlements itself were really fun. I picked up a couple side quests. There was one for Petra I picked up, one from these two new characters who will be apparently like recurring characters throughout the game. They gave me a new weapon type. And as I mentioned, I played the board game. There was another sort of mini game outside of town. I can go into like 12 different directions, I guess. Is there anything any of you particularly want me to jump into, though?
So I'm curious, because it's 6 months after Horizon Zero Dawn. Does Aloy still have any of her gear, or is this a Metroid situation where we've lost everything, we're starting fresh? Like, do I still have my Shield Weaver armor?
No.
Is the
you have one like standard armor that she has, and then a bow and arrow, at least when I started. I'm missing the introduction of the game, so I truly do not know
in those 6 months she encountered like this machine that like blew all this fire and just burned all her clothes off and all her armor.
If I had to guess, she encountered death and he zapped her and all her items just went away.
She's like, no, my inventory.
You don't one shot every skeleton you see. You're a weak little Alucard.
I don't know how that gets explained away. I assume there's some explanation to it, because she is going around and everyone knows her as the savior of Meridian. Like, she is looked at as an important figure in this world. So I'm sure there's.
But I love this idea, despite that she's starting off with a wooden shield and a stick.
Yeah, exactly. It would be like
someone
if Link
robbed
went
her
through
in the middle of the night.
Yeah. I got to assume that, yeah, there was a crazy robbery that happened or something. I don't know. But so anyway.
Okay. I didn't click the lock. Sorry, guys.
I was supposed to close that door. I thought it was just open for everyone. So she starts out with a pretty sparse inventory. I had sort of a standard arrow I gained, at least in this area. By the story, I gained a tripcaster. So there was a tripcaster that you get through the story beats. There was a new javelin thrower that I got through one of the side quests. And that's a like really powerful. Essentially, you launch a javelin and it sticks in an enemy, and then after a little bit of time, it explodes. I had one of those. And what's cool about it is, and the lot, this is sort of a very short version of it, but there will be a lot more quests that ask you to get specific parts from different machines. But some machines, you can only get those parts if you shoot them off before they die. And so you really need to balance, like, using that weapon will kill an enemy very quickly, but it will cause parts to get destroyed. So you need to kind of like risk reward what you're using in combat in that way.
If we rewind like the combat chat just a little, you did mention the melee is a lot more satisfying this
yes.
time around.
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
so,
like, I really want to touch on because yeah. I basically don't remember using... I don't think I used melee at all in the original that I can really recall.
Yeah, so there's... I guess a way that helps is, as opposed to the first game where it was those three and then four with the DLC, I think, rather limited skill trees, there are six different skill trees now that are much bigger. So I think they all have at least like 20 or so, you know, like in that range of skills to acquire. And some are returning ones like slowing down time as you're aiming. Some are like aiming arrows so that they can do kind of one of those arcs that rains things down on enemies. Some are the Valor Surges that we've seen Aloy do in some of the gameplay videos. And there's a whole bunch of others. But so, you know, one of the skill trees is Warrior, which is more like combat and melee and attack focused in that way. And you also will have a variety of melee pits. There's one in Chainscrape and then more in the West that will help train you up on specific ways to use the new melee stuff. And I guess just to start, part of what really helps the melee in my mind is that the animations are smoother and better connected, where it doesn't feel like doing an attack is either locking her into an animation for too long or is not really connecting to the thing she just did. So like a quick melee attack to like holding a charge melee attack to doing a dodge, all of that feels a lot smoother and easier to navigate in the midst of a fight and doesn't feel like it's a hindrance rather than a thing you actually want to use. You do want to use it. And so that just helps for minute one where the animation is much smoother. But, I would say you get the ability sort of with R2, it's a lot easier to do like a charged up heavy attack and also direct it so you can hold that down and then pretty easily go in whatever direction you need to. But a cool thing that you can do with your staff is do a lot of quick hits and it'll eventually charge up your staff's like innate power. And if you then do a heavy attack and it nails an enemy in the right way, you essentially get to do a thing that's called a resonator blast, and it essentially causes like part of their armor to be supercharged with all that energy. And so then if you use that in combination with an arrow, you will cause a massive like explosion of damage on them. And so it's better integrated into the rest of her arsenal too, is I think a really important thing.
What was that weird boomerang thing? It, like,
yeah,
she, like,
that's
threw
what I was
going
to ask.
And then it like stuck to him. And then
oh,
she
it was like
a,
yeah, this one
like
right
a,
here
it was
in
like
the
a
video.
Top.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is a spinning disc. I think, apologies, Kate, but if you're somewhere in this footage, you may be able to see the name of it because I'm blanking when she pulls up her reticule. This is essentially a new weapon I only got to use in the arena, which we can talk about as well. You know, I'm blanking on the name of them, but the arrows that you would use to kind of resonate and cause armor to fall off?
The Terra Blast.
Thank
the
you.
Disruptor.
Yeah.
Disruptor.
Disruptor Blast is also, I think, one of them. So you basically get to use this kind of, like, I'm just going to say it, Beyblade spinner top of a gear that you throw at the enemy, and it essentially can, like, lodge Harvest. In them and do a bunch of that type of damage specifically. So it's more That's of a, cool. like, use that as a finessed kind of, like, sustained damage option. And some of them have, I think, different elemental types and whatnot. But so... those are really cool, and yeah, as you can see, they kind of boomerang back to you as well. It was a really satisfying weapon to use. I only used it against the Slitherfang in the arena, because it was only available in that portion of the game. But yeah, there's a bigger variety of weapons. I think at one point on the Reticule 2, she just had also more space for weapons to be equipped at any one time. It wasn't just four.
There were at least
five or six, I want to say. I saw two new elements in terms of items. You can see some of it in the gameplay, but there's Acid, which... amusingly, you want to use acid arrows on acid enemies. So, like an enemy that has an acid canister, you want to shoot that with an acid arrow because that causes essentially like a chain reaction of...
Yeah, I was going to say, because they're not like biological creatures.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah. So they're not... Yeah. The acid kind of needs to work together to cause a bigger explosion. And then there's also plasma, which is a new thing that I only used in the arena for a bit, so I don't know every little bit of how it works, but some things will be weaker to plasma. It can sometimes do sustained damage over time. It's just another way to like integrate more elemental variety. But yeah, all of that stuff worked much better. The javelin throw is really powerful and really satisfying to use when it explodes. I would say I felt like I had to use combinations of things a lot more. Whereas in the base game, I kind of relied on the same two to three weapons. I used so much more of a suite of things throughout here.
Just seeing this gameplay, it's like you almost, obviously this is like kind of like to show off how cool the combat is, but at the same time, it's like you feel like everything she's doing is necessary, and you don't see her repeat a move like almost ever. It's she's just using her entire arsenal. It's super cool.
Yeah, so the Slitherfang fight, the only time I fought one was in the arena, and this is what I've been looking forward to fighting the most. It's the big snake one. It looks so cool, and it's a really, really powerful, kind of unwieldy enemy because its tail is going all around, and like it can shoot, you know, spray and things from its mouth. It can do bite attacks from its mouth, but it can also whip you with the tail. It can cause electrical charges in the ground to go off from the tail and then sort of electrocute a big chunk of the arena space that you're in. It has a bunch of different scent, like weak points, but also very secure points that it'll try to like get in your way so that you're not using. And it can do this thing where it's basically just burrowing in and out of the ground. It's a really, really fun boss fight. Like, this was one I was hoping would be cool and unique. And this was sort of, and I know, Lucy, this is something we talked about when you first reviewed Zero Dawn, was like the Jurassic Park of it all, like the wonder and awe, but also the like, I shouldn't mess with this thing.
And yeah, I mean, granted, I love that. I love that. But I also like, I really want to chat to you about Arena.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, we've been looking at a lot of footage, if you're watching the video version of Arena, like gameplay and sort of like what it looks like. I'm curious because I did love the Jurassic Park-esqueness of the original, but a lot of that came with the unexpected discovery side of it, right? Like I loved going into the world and seeing those creatures. Like it's very From Software sort of like, oh God, you know, I can't fight that yet. I accidentally stumbled across something huge. That's terrifying. I'm getting a huge adrenaline rush. I gotta like go level up and get better before I, you know. And I guess my one concern with the arena is that going to take away some of that element of discovery because all of the machines have been, you know, somewhat tamed and are now being introduced in this more kind of like structured way.
No,
right?
I would say if it was something you mainlined and you just go through every arena challenge possible, the way the arena was set up for me was they jumped me a bit further into the game. Like it's a later thing in the game. It is an optional part of the game. So it's sort of
optional, but optional in that way, like you probably want to do it because you want the best.
Yeah. It has some of the best weapons. Yeah. It has some of the best rewards in the game, I think. So like you'll want to do it, but I do think I'm remiss cause I didn't ask this question, but I would be shocked. I don't think the intention is the arena is the first time you encounter the Slitherfang. I think
I can picture it being this thing where it's like, hey, you fought this and now it's in your, you know, notebook, your bestiary. Yeah. So now it's in the arena.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense. Cause I definitely want to encounter like cool machines out in the wild first. Right.
Yeah. I do think there is, like, because we've seen a Slitherfang in the wild in one of the trailers. So I think, you know, this is a little bit behind the scenes, but I think it was essentially they wanted me to see the arena to get a sense of that this was a feature in the game and to understand it a little bit more for people. But I don't think the intention was showing it to me to say this is the way you'll fight the Slitherfang and the only way you'll fight it, because it is such a cool monster to be able to fight a machine to fight. And so I think it is. I wouldn't worry that you won't be able to discover things out in the wild, because, like, even just those few minutes I spent in the Forbidden West, like gliding off the edge and just seeing the field around me, I could see, you know, some of them were shrouded in fog, so I didn't exactly see them from that high vantage point, but it was like, oh, I see a group of machines over there. Oh, there's some other machines over there. Oh, there's a bandit camp there. You will discover things just out in the wild still, and I think even more so in this game. So this was more just to kind of give me a sense of this being a big new feature, because essentially each arena fight you will need to complete in under a time limit to get the medals that you can then spend on the reward. So you can beat them, but if you don't beat them under the time limit, you need to redo it essentially to be able to do that. So you really need to be, as Mark was saying, like not repeating yourself, like using everything to your benefit as much as possible, because you are going to need these medals if you want the best stuff. Go ahead.
I feel like with the arena, I feel like if they would have done a kind of a cool aspect of adding traps, kind of like a la Monster Hunter, to where you can actually trap the creatures before sending them off to the arena. I feel like
I love that, Jada. That's really cool.
And so I will say, at least like in terms of the arena, before you jump in, and it is worth talking about this in terms of the combat and the focus as well. Mm-hmm. Before you jump in, you're essentially on a platform and the fight doesn't start until you jump down. So you do have a moment to scan the arena at least and see what's ahead of you, know what enemies you have to deal with so that you're not going in and just, you know, good luck or lose a fight to be able to understand it. They want you to be able to have a leg up at least. And
I was saying before the arena, like being able to trap them. Okay. I was
totally
sure. Yeah.
No, I totally got what you mean. Just to say like you will get a ability to do that, but you also, you know, I don't think there is trapping. I did not see it and I don't think it is in there. But a cool thing that you can do now is because as I mentioned, like specific parts are going to be more important, things like that. A cool little thing that the focus does now, which is a small element, but I think a really big change, is that when you're scanning a machine, you can just use the D-pad to go between each part rather than having to like slowly move R3 around to try to nail. to slowly pan, but then miss it. It now just sort of like auto soft
as
locks.
As it's moving around and you're like, no, I'm trying to get your stomach. And it's like, nope.
Exactly. So it'll do that. And then you can now also specifically target and highlight that part. So when you go back into combat, it's still highlighted. So rather than just have, you know, like the whole enemy lit up in your focus view, you can have a bespoke item that you know you're going to need as your focus and be able to hone in on that. And so it's a small little thing, but it's like one of those touches. Same with like, you know, if Aloy runs out of space, she now has a stash of an inventory that she can access in settlements and you can just reload and restock from there.
Nice.
With health items, you know how you could collect health, herbs out in the environment. You would hit a max point. And so there is still here, you only, at least at this point in the game, during the opening settlement area, I could only hold 10. But the second I could still collect them and they would just go back to the stash. And then if you just hold down on the D-pad, it refills your inventory of those. So you could collect 60 of them and it's not an issue. You don't have to like worry about not picking things up. So it's just like small refinements, equipment, you now do updates at workbenches. You can also like craft outfits there and do all these things. And outfits now also have boosts and stat buffs that correlate directly to specific skills you can unlock. So if you were really honing in on like wanting the warrior skill tree or wanting the machine master skill tree or something, you can wear certain armor that will specifically help stats in certain areas as well. So things are also working together a lot more as well.
Nice. In terms of the new machines that you fought,
yes,
or that you saw, I guess, in this demo, you fought the Bristleback and the Slitherfang.
Yes.
What did Sony sort of like, in previews like this, they're not going to show all their cards, right? Like they're going to keep a few of the big ones behind closed doors for players discover. Did you get the vibe that like that was the case, that there were plenty more?
Yeah. It felt like I was really just seeing the beginning. Like, was obviously amazing to see it, but it did feel like one of those things that it felt like Sony was preserving for me, but also for everyone else out there who's gonna, you know, hear this coverage. Like, I think there are going to be very big and cool fights. Obviously we've seen the Tremor Tusk in the state of play. We know the Slitherfang's out in the wild. I saw a decent mix of old and new. So there were like scrappers and chargers, as well as these new bristlebacks, which the big thing for them is sort of they have the acid canisters that you want to really take advantage of and explode in the right ways. I also saw a new sort of like watcher level type called the Burrower. They sort of act like the watchers of the group, like they're prowling the territory and sort of doing that kind of, watching. But they can literally burrow, so they can like hop underground and kind of hide from you so you might miss them on the battlefield, and they can like spring up and surprise you. They can they can send out these reverberating sound blasts at you that kind of like disrupt the look of the screen for a little bit, like one of those sort of like screen shake kind of things happens. So they're like a fun twist on something that we know. And again, that's not like a big enemy type, but it's a new one and it does offer something unique. Same with the bristlebacks, which feel like chargers to a certain extent, but do have new elements you need to contend with, do have different pieces you'll need to acquire. And then, I fought the Slitherfang in the arena, but I am sure you will encounter those in the out, you know, the rest of the world. And again, like, it did really, really feel, and Ben McCall even said this a few times in the interview, is like, we showed you a decent chunk of the game. Like, you, there is still so much to be seen. Like, there's a ton more. Cause I saw 15, 20 minutes of the actual Forbidden West and didn't get to like the next major stopping point. So I really, really feel like it just kind of started the adventure there.
I'm like one of those terrible people, you know, in the Jurassic World movies where they keep like creating bigger dinosaurs because the crowd isn't satisfied with a T-Rex anymore. That's me. Like, I would have been that idiot that's like, no, T-Rex is boring. And like, I feel like that's what I want to see in this game. Like, I just want bigger.
And I think we'll see that in bigger and more creative, because there is nothing like the way the Slitherfang moves in the first game. Like, it is just so unlike anything else. And so I genuinely felt like this, and this is not just me being like, don't worry, guys. I do genuinely think there's going to be a lot more that we haven't seen when it comes to the sort of variety of machines that we'll fight. And I can't wait to see more of them. This was really a like, you know, it's easy to get burnt out in the lead up to a game. Even just by the trailer pushes for games and things like that, and certainly playing a big enough chunk like this, I was worried a little bit. I'd be like, okay, well, I feel like I've seen Forbidden West. I get the picture. It really was sort of that, like, oh, can you just leave me here to play for another 4 or 5 hours? Because I know everything else in this area I want to do, and then whatever else is beyond this, I can't wait to play. So, yeah, it was a really, really promising first look. I think it's one of those, like, if you were worried that this was going to somehow be, like, a small take on Horizon or not like a fully fledged thing, it is massive. It is a really, really big, exciting experience with a lot of potential. And I think the best way I can describe it is, like, it is not going to change your mind in terms of what you think of Horizon. Like, it's not a totally different game. It is very much built on the foundation of what worked so well in that first game. And there was a lot that worked well, like really, really well.
Oh, but, so good.
But
I reviewed it. Like, Horizon Zero Dawn was incredible.
It was amazing. And so it's such a great foundation. And so then I think this is really about refining and improving and just deepening that experience. And it feels like that's what they've done. Like, every little thing about Horizon that I did have nitpicks about, like I was saying, like, you know, brute forcing over environments or sort of like the stiff conversations, those are not make or break things, but they add up if you start to think about all of them. It almost felt like every little thing I saw in this demo was like, oh, that was a thing I didn't love as much in the first game, and now I like more. That was kind of the feel of it was, oh, this is everything I love about Horizon and better, in a way that got me really, really excited to see it, because it's such like a brand new territory that we're going to jump into. And there's a lot more feels rewarding. Like I was saying, I know I've said that a few times, but it genuinely did feel that way. It felt a lot more rewarding to do everything. I think that's the big picture of it without me repeating myself too much, but yeah, it's really, really exciting. And again, like, I didn't even see anything underwater. I didn't go to an underwater part of the game.
Oh, yeah.
That was literally my next question. I was going to see. I was like, how was the underwater traversal and potential combat? But
I didn't even see any of it. And it's not because I think, like, it was there and I missed it. I feel like I probably would have seen it. I think it was just because there was so much to see in this opening. And they are, from the few interviews I've done, it seems like they are kind of doing not a slow burn, but like a rollout of each new addition to the game so that you don't get totally overwhelmed at the start. It's not going to just be, here's every literal new thing possible. It's going to be
it's
gradually introducing.
This state of play footage that we're watching kind of is this like 16-minute like highlight reel of every single thing in the game. But it's like, I imagine this isn't the moment to moment where it's like suddenly you're above, you're below, you're fighting 17 different creatures at once. Like, it's more spread out and more, you know, easier to take in.
Like, if this were the intro of the game, I think I would have been embarrassed and apologizing the whole time, because I probably would have kept dying, because it just goes, there's so much happening.
Oh yeah, this is very, very orchestrated.
Exactly.
What we're watching
I think it's going to be a lot more freeing as you go, and I think you're going to want to. It's not going to feel like, okay, I need to get from point A to a very far point B. It's going to be the thing the best open world games do, which is I'm going to go to point B, but there's going to be 10 things along the way that are going to stop me, and I'm going to be entertained by those things. It feels like it has that potential.
Before we wrap up, I do just really want to quickly touch on, I mean, like, the driving through line of the story in Horizon Zero Dawn was this mystery, right? this big like mystery of what is this world and et cetera. And then Silence is still around. We don't know what he's up to. But there's this, you know, is that sort of the red blight or whatever we're calling it?
Yes.
Is that the sort of main thrust of the mystery in this game?
Essentially, and there's some quotes from Macaw about it sort of in my wider preview piece. But yeah, essentially, she sets off on this journey to find answers and figure out how to try to essentially save humanity from another apocalyptic extinction. The red blight seems to be spreading and potentially, you know, damaging the land and being this destructive force. But as she's going through, she is also navigating the sort of political and socio relationship things at play with all these tribes. So not just the Karja and Asaram, but the two new tribes that Bemaka mentioned are the Tanakh, which is actually a like three-part tribe. Like they have three different sort of unique branches that you'll meet and encounter, and they all behave very differently. And then the Utaru tribe, which is I think a little bit more in the mountainous region, if I'm not mistaken. And so you're also going to be, you know, involved in a lot of their smaller stories as well, and really be able to dig into those things. But it is kind of going to be about how Regala also factors into all of this, because she's essentially a rebel from the Tanakh tribe. And so she is kind of this chaotic force that's in the midst of this. She obviously has machine control, which I think, like, if you know Zero Dawn, you know a character who might be involved with things like that. It's not crazy to say. But yeah, a thing that I really noticed, I spoke to both Macaw and then senior writer on the game, Annie Katane, before the last story trailer. And they were like, mystery is a really, really core foundation of the Horizon universe. And yes, we have Aloy's lineage and the fact that this is built on America as like solved mysteries, but there's going to be a lot more mystery to set up, and not just things that Aloy will need to discover that maybe the player might have a guess at, but they're like, we're going to really introduce some exciting stuff that they haven't shown at all. And so,
awesome.
You know, I think on a story level, it's sort of a good impetus for getting her out there. And Aloy is very sure-headed and very sort of confident that she is the one who needs to do this. She doesn't want to get her friends in danger. She doesn't want to do this. So that is also a big thing. They said companions are going to be a bigger deal. Aloy's relationships with people are going to matter a lot more, because she's sort of going at this thinking, I need to do this. I need to be the one to live up to my, you know, clone mother. I need to be able to be the person to save the world. And how she interacts with a lot of those people, both who care deeply for her, like Erend and Petra, new people, new friends, new enemies, is going to be a very big deal, they said in the game. So yeah, and based on the interactions I saw in this first part, it's very well written. It's very entertaining. It's very heartwarming and sad and funny. Like, it really nailed a lot of different tones in a small space that, yeah, I've been going in being like, yeah, I'm really excited for the Horizon sequel. I loved one. I can't wait. But playing it was like, oh, I'm going to lose it probably 100 hours in Forbidden West and be very, very happy about it.
Yeah, that's what I can't wait for. Well, I guess my final question would be in Horizon Zero Dawn, there was a lot of just like, you're in this like jungle, right? And then every so often, it's like this in Death Stranding as well, you would then stumble upon something that would remind you that this is a post-apocalyptic world, right? Your waterfalls and lakes and all this like tribal stuff, and then a school bus or a streetlight.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen from Forbidden West, it seems like there's more of that, because it was in Zero Dawn, like I said, it was in specific sections you would find, yeah, like a structure, and then it's like, mm-hmm, there's your streetlights, there's your school bus, and I know you go to like a stadium at one point. Is it more littered throughout this world, or is it the same kind of deal? Not saying that this is a bad thing, but is it kind of deal where you would forget that you're in the real world, technically?
I would say in the area I saw, it was a little lighter. Like, there wasn't a, oh, here's, you know, the Las Vegas Strip that I've stumbled upon necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I do think there will be more of it, because just, you know, based on the interviews I've had, that was a big mystery at the end of the day. Like, you don't really find out until you read some side stuff or really understand toward the later end of the game that you are in America. Like, you are literally in a specific, yep, part of America.
We saw a lot of San Francisco in the state of play footage, right?
Exactly. So I think they're playing sort of with the idea that that's an open secret now, and mm-hmm, they can be more interesting with that stuff. I don't think it's going to suddenly be, here's a landmark every 20 steps, but like, I ran by a lot more kind of dilapidated housing that looked like it was from our era and just kind of let waste away. There's a new side quest thing called Vista Points, where essentially you'll get like your focus will get information from a radio tower from our time, and it corresponds to a location in the world, but all you have is sort of a fragmented image that shows up on your focus in front of you.
In the original.
Did you have to line them
up? Yeah, that's basically, if I'm remembering correctly, I might be forgetting what you did. And that's how you discovered that it's in Colorado, look through your focus and you could see like the Rocky Mountains. And stuff
then
like
I'll
that.
Say
and
it, it felt at least sense. That this was like more of a part of the experience then. This was like a thing you're going to be doing more repeatedly, I guess it's fair to say. Sorry, it's been a while since I did those quests, and you definitely know the game.
5 years old, and I really can't believe that. But like, think about it, I'm like, oh, this is basically coming out on its fifth anniversary. Like, it's insane because I feel like it's still somewhat new.
So that essentially came up much earlier, and I think the interactions of Aloy with the old world is going to be a bigger deal throughout the game, essentially. So yeah, I think that probably best answers that. But long and short of it is I really, really enjoyed it, and I can't wait till we all get to talk about it in full in just about a month, a month now, when Horizon comes out.
It is going to be born.
Perfect
timing.
hopefully they sleep a lot.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah.
The sounds of a Slitherfang hissing in death as you destroy it won't wake them up, I assume. But no, thank you all for indulging me in just word vomiting all this information about Horizon.
Thank you, Dorno. I've learned so much. This has been so great.
I've looked through the footage so much, and yet there's so much that it doesn't tell you. So yeah. And this conversation, I'm the same as you. I went from being very excited to extremely very excited.
No, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, yeah, I was really confident in that team, and obviously Zero Dawn was amazing, but this feels like really Horizon coming into what the promise of that first game was kind of showing you it could be. This is the real like delivery of that. So it's going to be really exciting. It's probably going to take a lot of hours to dig through, so I'm really excited to kind of find everything else out past this introductory sequence that we're going to get once the full game launches. But as I mentioned, there's my preview up on IGN and YouTube. You can go check that out. Check out Mark's comparison video. We're working on a few other things as well. So go check all of that stuff out if you want more details about what I saw from Horizon Forbidden West.
And if you want to catch up on Zero Dawn's story, because it has been 5 years, we will have a video for you to watch as well.
Yeah, we're making sure everyone is prepped, because you can mainline Zero Dawn between now and Forbidden West, but also if you're playing all the other games coming out in February, we understand, and hopefully our video can help you. But Mark, Lucy, and Jada, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. A reminder to everyone listening, we will have a normal episode of Beyond this week as well, so fear not. If Sony decides to also acquire Activision somehow and then they have to duel in court, we'll be sure to talk about it on the show. But whatever else happens in the world of PlayStation, we'll cover it later this week on Beyond. But thank you again to all three of you for joining me. Thank you to Kate behind the scenes for making this episode happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.